I have time to have a
daf. I was going to ask you. Okay, so today we're officially on Daf Dalid Maseches Chagiga. We left off last time at the Tanur Rabbanan, about six or seven lines from the bottom of Gimel Abiz. We're continuing to dissect each and every person that the Mishnah had described is exempt from Re'iya, whether that means Olas Re'iya, whether that means Ola Lerega or the Karban. So now we're going to discuss the Shote. We said someone who is an insane, doesn't have the proper mental capacity, such a person is exempt from Re'iya. And the question is, how does one define that? Without a clinical diagnosis, how do we assess halachically whether someone is a Shote or not? So says the Gemara over here, Tanur Rabbanan, Ezehu Shote, who's considered to be someone with lacking mental capacity, Hayotze Yechidi Balayla, someone who goes out at night by himself. Now this clearly refers to not one time, but he has a pattern of going out at night by himself. V'halon v'beis hakvaros. And by the way, that's talking about a case where there's not necessarily lights on the street. So for him to do that, he's taking on a little bit of danger. V'halon v'beis hakvaros. And someone who sleeps at night in the cemetery. Again, consistently sleeping in the cemetery also is a sign of being mental incapacity.
It's a coincidence.
Why?
Because there's a story about sleeping in the cemetery. Today's down.
Wow.
Today's half.
Look at that. And the third category would be Hamakare Eskesuso, someone who tears his clothing. So again, just those who just walked in, we're describing a Shote, someone who the Mishnah describes is exempt from Re'iya because he doesn't have the mental capacity. So Gemara tries to figure out what's considered a Shote. It gives three examples. Number one, if the guy goes out at night in a dangerous situation all by himself. Number two, he sleeps in the cemetery at night. Number three, he rips his own garments. So now the Gemara discusses, do you need all three of these? Is any one of the three good enough to label you a Shote? So Itmar, Rav Huna Amar, were six lines up from the bottom of Gimel Mabez, the first wide line. Rav Huna Amar, Achiyuhu, Kulan Basachas. Rav Huna says, to be labeled a Shote, you have to do all three of these things. So going out by yourself at night, not enough. Sleeping in the cemetery, not enough. You have to both go out at night by yourself and sleep in the cemetery and tear your clothing. If you do all of those, now you're officially mentally incapacitated. However, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Afilu ba'achas mehen, any of the three in isolation, each warrant you a Shote. So the Gemara wants to know, hey chidami, what's the case over here? Eid aviluhu derech shtus. If when a guy does one of these things, he does it in such an insane way that it's very clear he's deranged, then afilu b'chadanami, meaning, for example, he rips his garments but without any logical reason, then that should be enough to warrant him an insane person. What could be the logic of the one who says you need all three? He's clearly doing a thing in a very deranged way. If when he does any of these things, he has some logical basis or reason, then afilu kulu nami lo. Then even if he does all three, as long as he can logically justify to you why he's doing it, then even if he does all three, he shouldn't be a Shote. So we're trying to understand, what is this guy's motivation for engaging in these three activities? So the Gemara answers, three lines from the bottom, La'olam deka'avaluhu derech shtos. Really, he's doing it in a deranged way. So now, why, if that's the case, then why not just one? So the answer is, says the Gemara, because for each of them, he actually has a little bit of a justification. It's not a great justification, but there's something he could say. What does that mean? Okay, so he's sleeping in the cemetery at night. You see him, you say, you know, that's pretty weird. No one really does that. Amor, he's going to tell you, you know why he's doing that? He's doing that because he wants the shaydim to help him. He's a necromancer. He wants to practice his magic. And he thinks if he gets the spirits to visit him while he's sleeping in the cemetery. Now, that's not a reason you or I would accept, but at least in his magic world, that makes sense to him. So it's not completely off his rocker, whereas we can't even begin to fathom what he's thinking. So he might have a logical explanation for that particular shtus. Now, v'hayotzi yichidi b'layla, someone who goes out at night by himself,
he also might have a justification. What's his justification? Amor gandarifas achte. He's going to tell you that there's a certain illness, which is machlokes, whether this means he has some type of schizophrenia, he's very worried, whether it means he's just deranged, whether it means that he's has some type of fever. But either way, he believes that going out at night by himself is somehow going to alleviate that sickness. Now, and even though maybe a normal doctor wouldn't advise that, but at least it's something that is somewhat reasonable where he could justify why he went out by himself at night. And finally, Hamakarias Ksuso, someone who tears his garment, Emer Bal Machshavosu. Okay, he's bewildered, he's confused. So what the Gemara is pointing out is if he does any one of these things, he could tell you, okay, this was a momentary lapse, this is something I'm dealing with. However, says the Gemara, Kivan de Avdinu Lakulhu, once he does all three, Havaluhu Kimi, Shenagach, Shor, Chamor, Vegamo. Right? It's almost like one time could be just your little shtus. When a person has too many shtuses, he's just a shota. So that's kind of what the Gemara is saying. It's saying you can get away with justifying one weird thing you do, two weird things you do, but at a certain point, it becomes who you are. And this guy, he's doing too many things that at a certain point, he's a shota. And the Gemara compares it, very interesting, to a shor hamuat. So we know from Baba Kama that when a shor, an ox, right, once he gores three times, he becomes shor hamuat, he has to be stoned. He's considered a dangerous shor. You can't own him, you can't be near him. So the Gemara wants to know, normally, when an ox gores, let's say it's an ox, he's goring cows, right? Or he's goring sheep. So he gores three sheep, and now he's considered a shor hamuad. But let's say he gores one day a fellow shor, the next day a donkey, and the next day a camel.
Not a shor hamuad.
So it's a machlokes. This opinion in that Gemara says he is a shor hamuad. Now what's the logic to say he's not? Because He just can't make up his mind. Like, he just must see something. There must be something. He ate something that wasn't so great. But the logic to say he is a shor hamuad is this guy, imagine like, you know, Kaviyachol, a killer who doesn't have a particular victim he has in mind. He wants to kill anyone. It's almost the most dangerous killer because he'll kill anyone. So the logic would be that this shor is so vicious, so violent, he doesn't have a particular species of animals he's concerned with. He'll kill an ox, he'll kill a cow, he'll kill a camel, he'll kill a donkey. So therefore, he should be considered a shor hamuad to kill anything. And therefore, so too by this shote. Meaning, if he just has one shtus, he sleeps in the cemetery at night, all right, let him have his one shtus. But at a certain point, he becomes someone who we assume he's just a shote in his whole life. Just like the shor hamuad, once he gores three different people or three different animals, we assume he's just going to gore everyone.
What if he sleeps in the cemetery three times?
Oh, so it doesn't. Because again, he could justify that. And even though he's consistently doing it, he still has that one justification he can constantly use. Mm-hmm. The same way a person who rips his clothing, again, I'm doing it for whatever reason. So I keep, that's my shtus. Okay. The whole point is, too many shtuses equals you are a shote. So, second top line in Dalet Amud Aleph. So I'm a Rav Papa, Ishamu Leila Rav Huna. So Rav Huna was the one who said he has to do all three to be labeled a shote. So says Rav Papa, if Rav Huna heard Hadetanya, the following braisa, which is Izahu Shota, who is a shote? Zeham Abed Komash Nosunlo, someone who loses anything you give them. Now, just parenthetically, if that's the definition, then maybe a lot of teenagers are shotes, a lot of us are shotes. I mean, but here it really means not just losing your keys. It's more global than that. So he says, meaning, because what does this price imply? First of all, point number one is this wasn't on the list of the three, right? We had sleeping in the cemetery at night, we had going out at night, and we had ripping your clothing. Do we have losing anything you get?
No.
That wasn't on the list. And this price only lists one thing.
By the way, the Arskra says destroys as opposed to lose. Does that make a difference?
Ma'abi mashino shimlo. That does make a difference, right? So here it's not just he loses it, but he whatever he gets, he just rips up. So that's a fair point. So says the Gemara, have a hadarbe. Then Rav Huna would have retracted his statement that you need all three of those previous categories to warrant you a shotes. The Gemara just wonders over here. Ibailu, the Gemara wonders. Ki have a hadarbe. When Rav Papa says that Rav Huna would have retracted Is it mimikari ksuso hudahave hader bay? Did dom yelaha? Odilma mikulu havi hader. Meaning like this. Rav Huna's statement was, you need all three of these shtusim to be considered a shota. So none of those were destroying what you got. So when we say Rav Huna would have retracted, does it mean he would have only retracted from the makarias ksuso? Because the way Ira explained it, that's pretty similar, right? Ripping your clothing, destroying what you're given. So maybe he would just change that one category. He would keep the other two and just say, okay, fine, instead of ripping your clothing, it's anything you destroy. Mm-hmm. Is that what Rav Papa meant when Rav Huna would have retracted? Just from number three, but keep other two? Or does he retract it from the whole thing and saying, to be a shota, you only need one thing to be destroying anything you get? And that the Gemara leaves off with a teiku. We don't know.
How do we paskin?
On what's considered a shota? Actually, in Shulchan Aruch, it paskins even more broad than this. In Shulchan Aruch, it paskins that we paskin that afilu achas mehen, first of all, one of the three, but even more mikel than that, or machmer, depending on how you view it, these are just examples. Meaning you can come up with other shtusim as well. If a person is just being crazy and it's not one of these three, and he doesn't doing that consistently, that could also be a shota. The way the Shulchan Aruch phrases it is, anyone who's engaged in something that's detrimental to themselves, someone who's constantly putting themselves into sakana with no logic, like, you know, you say skydiving, but that's at least there's a fun element to that. Someone who's doing something without really a logical purpose to it, that even though it's not on this list, Shulchan Aruch says you can consider a shota. It does become subjective, correct.
So,
it requires Gedolim to...
Based and decides who's a shota?
I mean, this comes up a little maisa, really, in regards to... there are many shalos Jews written about men who become deranged, and the question is, the wife wants to walk away from the marriage, but a shota
can't give a get.
Mm-hmm. So that becomes a big problem. Right? Let's say a guy just goes haywire. He just has a mental breakdown. Now he's in a psychiatric ward. So what do you... So is that a shota? Right? So the post came out, you know, the derech of Gedolim has been to always try to find a way to release a woman from marriage, if possible. But again, it requires a halachic interpretation and a halachic, you know, process. But that's really where it comes up, halacha l'maisa, not in terms of aliyah l'regel. It comes up more often in that context, but you're right. It is subjective, and that's why you need post can sort of advise on how you would go. Now, the Bali Musar have taken this little keta, this little paragraph of Gemara, and have seen it in a very instructive light. Because we know the Gemara in Sota tells us, in the beginning of Sota, that Ein Adam Osa Avera Elim Kain Yatsubo Ruach Shtus. So the Gemara over there has an interesting lashon. It says that a person only sins if a Ruach Shtus enters him.
Like a deranged moment.
Like a deranged moment.
Sota. Deranged moment.
Well, that's what it globalizes to any avera you do, right? Talking about sota. So that means, think about it, right? If a person, whatever the most kadosh moment in your life is during the whole year, let's say in Ni'il Yom Kippur, right? Kol Nidri Yom Kippur. If someone came to you at that moment and proposed to you, even an avera you might otherwise consider during the year, more likely than not, you push it away. Right? There are certain moments where we know intuitively, intellectually, in our heart, God is there, God is watching us, He's always there, He knows what we do, but we forget. So the Gemara seems to assume that that for us is a deranged moment. Because the status quo for us, if we would be considered of sane mind, that's to recognize God's always in front of you. If that's the case, how could one ever do an Avera? Right? So, Ruach Shtus, okay. So the Bali Musar say, now if you read this Gemara, this could also be applying to us. Because the Gemara wants to know, Ezehu Shota. I mean, for us, what's considered someone who does an Avera because he had a Ruach Shtus? So Gemara gives three examples. Number one, Hayotze Yechidi Balayla. So the Bali Musar say that we know that our neshama is clothed, right? We have a guf, but how does our neshama clothed? I mean, what does our neshama use to encase itself, to feel comfortable, to feel warm? It's the mitzvos. It's the Torah. That's how the neshama feels clothed. So hayotze yechidi balayla means someone who leaves this world, like goes out at night, right? This world would be the day, and he's still yechidi. He didn't take anything with him. He left the world without accomplishing, without really making something of himself. That's a shota. Someone who went through life not recognizing his purpose. Number two, halon bebeis hakvaros.
So if you notice, even though we call a cemetery based on kfaros because there are many graves, but the Bali Musar say, halam based on kfaros means someone who sleeps in many graves. We know this concept of Gilgal, of Gilgulim, which means that if I didn't accomplish my task in this world, God puts me back again as someone else to accomplish my task. So a person can be loved based on kfaros. You could have many kfarim. You had the one that you were this life, and now you're in the grave, and now you went back to someone else, and that person died. You could have many graves. So that's also a shote, because why do you have to come back as a Gilgal? Accomplish your purpose in this life. And then finally, Mekaras Ksuso. Again, we said the mitzvos in the Torah are what clothes a person. Someone who's Mekaras Ksuso, someone who rips that off, who doesn't acknowledge that, who doesn't want to clothe himself in the Torah mitzvos, he's a shote. So all of these things which are sort of gearing us towards understanding and recognizing what our purpose in this world is, someone who goes through life and doesn't recognize that, he's considered a shote, because he has a ruach shtus in him, not realizing what God put him on this world for. Now also, a parenthetical to the parenthetical, is that that concept of a gulgulim happens to be pretty mainstream. Right? You ask maybe a teenager or someone, oh, Gilgul, that's a cool concept, but that's not something that's reserved for Kabbalah. It's Rashi al-Torah talks about gulgulim. This is a very accepted concept, the concept of gulgulim. Right? We believe that throughout the Torah, we have concepts of the Gugulim. There was one controversial statement that one of the Achronim made that actually got him into a lot of trouble. But the truth is, it was a pretty valid point. So there was one of the Achronim named the Rashash. Okay, you ever hear the Rashash? He's in the back of the Gemara. Interesting story why he's in the back of the Gemara. So in the back of the Vilna Shas, they put a bunch of different Achronim. The Yavits they put there, the Mitzpe Esan. They put a lot of different Achronim. They compiled them into something called the Otzer Mefarshim. The back of the Gemara. The Rashash, he was a big tzaddik, big Talmud Chacham. He also was very wealthy, and he also owned a printing press. And so, at a certain point in his town, the Rabbanim, the Bali Mechabrim, Sfarim, they came to him and they said, we want to print the Gemara. He said, oh, no problem. One caveat. You're going to put my parish in the back. So he got his parish in. So there's a Gemara in Baba Metzia, on Daf Kuv Zayin, which seems to have a very innocuous statement. The Gemara is darshaning a pasuk of Baruch Atah Bevalecha, Ubaruch Atah B'teisecha, which simply put means one of the rabbis was giving the other one a bracha as he left him, and he says, Baruch Atah Bevalecha, you're blessed when you come, and you're blessed when you leave. And the drasha he made on that was, to this rabbi, was just as Bevoecha, you entered this world, Belichet, so to my bracha for you is you should leave this world, Belichet, I mean, you can do tshuva, whatever it is, you don't sin, you should leave this world very clean. So again, an innocuous statement. So the Rashash in the back of the Gemara says six words. I'm going to mess it up with the six words, but essentially what he says is, Mikan Yesh Ksas Stira Lebali Gilgulim. From here, there's a little bit of a contradiction to those who believe in Gilgulim. Why? Because what did this rabbi give the other one a bracha that just like you entered this world without sin, hold on, stop right there. He's assuming that a person enters this world without sin.
In other words, clean as shaman.
What do you mean? If you believe in Gilgulim, then yeah. A baby enters the world possibly with a mission to do. He has sinned. Not that the baby sinned, but that he enters not clean, right? And therefore, same the Rashash same. Says that this Gemara in Baba Metzia is a contradiction to those who believe in Gilgulim. And many of the Hasidic sects, especially, they put the Rashash in Cherem. They said, if the Vilna Shas, if it has his parish, don't buy that Gemara. Mm-hmm. They would only buy a Gemara without the Rashash. Happens to be, it's a valid point that he's making. I mean, you have to explain the Gemara somewhere. You could argue what he meant was that the baby didn't commit a sin. Meaning, he's saying you entered the world without sin, so Rashash's point was, well, you didn't enter without sin if you're a Gilgal, you still have some baggage you have to sort of unload, but maybe he just meant that the baby himself didn't do any averos, you should leave it. So again, you could interpret that, but that's just, you should know that the Rashash and the Gugul and the printing press, that all comes up. Correct. That's conventional wisdom. That's what he said. He says miktsa stira, because I think the Rashash himself acknowledged that that was mainstream. He just didn't have an answer to how you understand that Gemara, that the rabbi is saying you enter the world without chait, if really you believe in Gilgulim, then it's not a given that that's true. Okay, so that's lump basic kfaros, that it's possible a person could be a shota because he sleeps in multiple graves, him being a Gilgul of a previous person that needed some tikkun. Okay, continuing. So now the Gemara is going to discuss additional individuals who are putter, who are exempt from Re'iyah. And two of them are the Tumtum. Tumtum is a person who it's not clear whether he's a male or female. He doesn't have either genitalia very apparent. And androgynous is the opposite, where he has both male and female genitalia both apparent. So says the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, Zachor. So this is part of the pasuk of Kol Zechurcha, that everyone should come up to Yerushalayim. So in Zechurcha is the Shoresh Zachor, which means male. So that is Lahotzias Anashim. As we know, women are not chayiv in Aliyah L'Regel and the Karban Re'iyah. Zechurcha, the additional chaf at the end of Zechurcha, is Lahotzi Tumtim L'Adrogonis, to teach you that only males, not females, and also not these two categories of individuals. Kol Zechurcha, the word kol is larabos esaktanim, every male, even young males, even children. So now the Gemara is going to take one by one and try to question these cases. So Amar Mar, Zachor Lahotzi Es Anashim. So the word Zachor in the Pasuk of Zechurcha is coming to exclude women from Aliyah L'Regel. So the Gemara says, do you need a Pasuk to exclude women?
I have a question about that. We had, I think, last week the Zeret Shava between Aliyah L'Regel and
Hakel.
The women were Chayim in Hakel.
Oh, so you're Mechavim to the next line of the Gemara.
Oh, okay.
So you're on the right track, clearly. Okay. So you must have done your Chazara last week.
No,
same for last week. So the Gemara asks, I don't get it. Don't we have a rule that mitzvos haseh she'azman grama nashim are pater from? And re'iyah, being olul regel, karban re'iyah, those are things that are very time-bound. So why do you need a pasuk of zachor to exclude nashim? Of course they're pater from the general rule of mitzvos haseh she'azman grama. Chol mitzvah she'azman grama nashim peturos. So Gemara answers what Wayne said, istrech. Because I would have thought, Nilef Re'iyah Re'iyah Mehakel. Last week we saw the Gemara made a drasha, Hekish, and linked Re'iyah to Hakel. And Ma Laholam, just like over there by Hakel, Nashim Chayavos, we know women are included, right? That was why women come, Lishmoa, complaining to the Grah, that women only do mitzvahs that they're chayv to do. So Afkan, Nashim Chayavos. So if I would have only had that Hekish of Re'iyah Re'iyah, I would have thought the women are chayv in Re'iyah as well. Kamash Malan, that's why we need the Pasuk of Zachor to exclude women, because the general rule of Mitzvah Sensei Shaman Grama is not enough here, because I have a different Hekish which is pulling me in the opposite direction. And therefore, Zachor, once and for all, excludes women from Re'iyah. Okay, good. Omar Mar, continuing, Zichur Cha, the extra Chaf, is Lahotzi to exclude Tumtum V'Adroganis. The Gemara says, Bishlama androgynous, I understand why I need a pasuk to exclude someone with both male and female genitalia. Because Ister Ksakta El Chamina, Hoel V'itzlet Sad Zachros Lechayev. Well, listen, the guy actually has male genitalia. You might think, okay, granted he also has female, but he's half man, or he at least has some male components, so let him be chayev like any other man. Therefore, Kamash Malan Zichurcha. So I understand why we need a pasuk to exclude him, because otherwise I might have thought we should include him. However, what about the tumtum? What was the kamash malan by androgynous? Deberia b'fnei atzmahu. He's a unique creature. He's not a male, and even though he has male genitalia as part of himself, he's a unique creature. He's neither male nor female. Ella tumtum. What about the individual that has neither? Nothing is really visible. Everything's kind of hidden internal. So there, Sfikahu, we don't know what he is. Nothing is showing. So mi itzdrech kra, lemiute Sfika, what would be the status quo with someone like this? Would you assume someone with no visible signs of male or female, without a pasuk, would you assume he's chayev, or would you assume he's not?
He's not, because it's Rabbanan. It's the Rabbanan.
It's not the Rabbanan. Why is Re'iyah the Rabbanan? Oh, so you're raising a good point. Well, what you're saying is a kash on the Gemara. But first, let me explain the logic of the Gemara. The Gemara's logic is that prove to me, this is not about Dreis Darabonon, it's about to tell me I'm chayv in something, prove to me I'm chayv in something. I'm not chayv in something until you can show me where I am chayv. So this tumtum, he has no visible signs of being a male at all. So prove to me that I'm chayv. Why would you need a pasuk to exclude him? Just by the very fact that he has no visible characteristics of a male, he should automatically be excluded. Right. So this is the Mefarshim struggle with this over here. That why is the Gemara assuming that the status quo for such an individual should be kula if you say safek d'oraisa l'chumra, so he has a safek, it's a din d'oraisa, say l'chumra. So Mefarshim addresses it in two different ways. One way is to challenge the assumption that safek d'oraisa l'chumra is such a black and white rule. Meaning, this is going to sound a little confusing. Is suffik d'oraisa l'chumra a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabbanan? Meaning, who told you that suffik d'oraisa l'chumra? It's a machlokes, but some say that that whole rule is only d'rabbanan. The rabbanan tell you that when you have a din d'oraisa, go l'chumra. We always think of it as like a d'oraisa rule. If it's the d'rabbanan rule, then it might not necessarily apply here. But the other way you can go with this is, how do you define a chumra and a kula? Meaning, it's, okay, so it's the chumra. And the chumra should mean, I'll be chayiv in this. Okay, so you want to tell me that Savak Dereis L'chumra should tell me that this tumtum, it's a chumra for him to go do Alil Regal and go bring the carbon Riyah. But there's a problem with that, which is that sometimes you have a chumra habali de kula. Sometimes being machmer on something actually leads to being lacking something else. Let's say a person is not chayiv in a karbon. So he takes a cow from his backyard, he brings it into the azara. Right away, that's a problem. You're not allowed to bring chulin into the azara. It'll only be kadosh animals. So on the chance this tumtum is not obligated, this is bad for him. I mean, this chumra is not like, you know, there's like the classic vart they say when it comes to a guy coming back from Israel and he says to his Rebbe, like, I want to take on this chumra. Right? So if he's a good Rebbe, he's going to say to him, make sure it doesn't hurt anyone. Or if you want to wear a gartel, so fine, as long as you don't poke someone in the face when you're tying it. But if your chumra is that I'm going to learn really loud in my dining room, keep everyone up in my house, so that's not a chumra. That's a kula for other people. And by kula, I don't mean leniency. Kula, meaning you're hurting other people. So here, it's not hurting other people, but it might be hurting himself. By the Torah, by the rabbi saying, oh, be machmir, bring the karbon. What, on the chance? But what if he's not chayev? He could actually be costing himself and violating an avera. So like a good example of this is Hilchos Brachos. Right? So a person is drinking his water, and then he all of a sudden in the middle of his water, he realizes, wait, did I make a shahakel? Did I not? Right? So there we say, what do we say? Savek brachos lahakel. Right? That makes sense, right? Well, what about benching? What do we say by benching? A person is, you know, he ate a sandwich about an hour ago, he's doing something else. Did I bench? I forgot. Does he bench now?
That's
Savek d'oraisa l'chumra. So over there, the chumra doesn't really come with a downside. I mean, on the chance that he did bench, so bracha levatala, but I think the post can say it's not a bracha levatala, because even if you did bench, there might be a reason to say you could bench again. The two benchings, it's not necessarily the worst thing in the world. Okay, over here though, there's really a big downside, and therefore the mefarshim say that maybe why the Gemara wasn't entertaining Savat Reis L'Chumra is because over here, oh, and by the way, there's a second problem. Not only bring chulin lazara, but these karbonos require something called smicha, which is I have to lean on the karbon. And there's an isser to lean on a karbon that I didn't have to bring, because smicha is reserved for these type of karbonos. Okay, so you see how there could be downsides. We tend not to say a chumra when the chumra might have a kula associated with it. So back to the Gemara's question. The Gemara's question is, by a tumtum, prove to me that he's chayev. Why do you need a pasuk to exclude a tumtum? So says the Gemara, Amar Abaye, kisha beitzav mibachutz. His testicles are visible. So therefore, we have to redefine what type of tumtum we're referring to. His gid, his eiver, his male Iver, that is hidden. And therefore, that's why we don't know if he's male or female. But his testicles, which would not, even though that indicates he might be a male, we don't paskin male based on just testicles. We need to see the Iver as well. And here we don't see that. But at least it's something where you would think, since at least his testicles are showing, maybe he should be chayev in the carbon because, listen, most likely than not, more likely than not, he's a male. Therefore, kamash malon zichurcha to tell me he's potter. So you need this in a case where it's a type of tumtum that has visible testicles but no visible aver. Fine. And finally, amarmar kol zichurcha l'rabu sezaktanim. We said that kol zichurcha, the word kol means every male, including some males that we wouldn't think. Which males is that? So we said ketanim. So the Gemara says, hold on one second. You should all have this question. What do we say in the Mishnah? Who is a person who's put from Riyah? Cheresh, Shota, and?
Katan.
So how could Kol Zechurcha tell me that Katanim are Chayiv in Riyah when our Mishnah said Katanim are Pater? So what would you say?
It depends what it is.
Okay. Right, so that's the next line of the Gemara. So Amar Abaye, Lokasha, Kan Bekatan Shi Yigil Chinuch, Kan Bekatan Shalohi Yigil Chinuch. Our Mishnah was talking about a young kid. That kid, below the age of Chinuch, he is Pater from Riyah. And this kol zechurcha means a kid who's 9, 10 years old, he is chayev. The Gemara says, really? Katan shigil chinuch derabbanan hu. Meaning the implication of kol, including a 10-year-old, would imply that that 10-year-old's chayev on a do'oraisa level. The pasuk including him, but we know that's not true. Never heard of a 10-year-old being chayev on a do'oraisa level in anything. He's only derabbanan. So how could the word kol be including a 10-year-old if he's only chayav midrabbanan? So the Gemara says, okay, you got me. In hachanami, you're correct. That 10-year-old is only chayav midrabbanan. Ukra, and the pasuk of kol, is a smachta ba'alma. Often you have a dindrabbanan that's sort of hinted to in a pasuk. So a 10-year-old's chayav in riyah because he's chayav in chinuch midrabbanan, and we have an allusion to it from kol zuhurcha. It's just an allusion. It's not really telling us a din. So the Gemara says, well, then what is the din? If the word kol is merely alluding, but that's not really what it's teaching you, then what is kol teaching you? Says the Gemara, the elakra lamayasa. So if the word kol is not actually teaching me a halacha that a 10-year-old's chayav midoraisa, because we know he's not, it's only alluding to it, then what halacha is the word kol coming to teach me? So the Gemara answers, l'kid da'achirim. It's coming to teach me the halacha quoted by this group known as Achirim, Ditanya, or Ditanya, we have a brace that says, Achirim Omrim, Hamakamitz, Vahamatsarif, Nechoshes, Vahabursi. So you have certain categories of occupations, which Rashi tells us are very smelly. Bad smells. What are they? So you have Makamitz. Rashi tells us you gather up dog excrement together to do something with hides. You have Mitzarif Nechoshes. Someone who's
gastroenterology.
It's someone who's doing something with copper, bursi, someone who's tanning hides. Rashi points out in all these cases, you have rechon ra, that they smell very bad, and therefore the Gemara is telling us patur min ariya, because they smell bad, they are patur from ariya. Why? Because mishum shenemar kol zuchurcha, all the males go up. So what's the drasha? Mishi yacholalos im kol zechurcha. You know, when the shul is taking a bus to Israel for Alila Regel, you have to be able to get on that bus and no one says get off the bus. So if you smell terrible, no one's going to let you go with them. So therefore, yatsu elu she'inen ra'uy lalos im kol zechurcha. When you try to go in the group, they're not going to let you go with them. So kol zechurcha means I have to be able to go with everyone. These people are not going to go with everyone.
They're not taking a bus. They're going with their animals.
Why animals? You're saying they're going with the donkey, right? Okay, yeah. Are you saying the animals smell? Yeah.
But they smell.
They didn't smell as bad as these people.
Yeah. So what's interesting about this last line is that the Rambam, when he codifies this halacha, he writes that he agrees to this statement, but he writes, okay, so even if you're a gastro, you come home, you take a shower, put on a suit, go to a wedding, you don't smell anymore, hopefully, we hope. So the Rambam says, and therefore, one of these occupations, as long as he's cleaned up, he can go. I mean, this halacha is merely telling you, if you are smelly, don't go. But if you can rectify that, then you're okay. So the only problem with that, Rabbi Yashiv in his Ha'aros, he points this out, is then should there ever really be a p'tur? What do I mean? What?
Clean up.
So so since he could, then what?
Then he should.
And more than he should.
He's chayiv too.
Meaning, I don't get it. Okay, a guy's going to say, fine, so I'll just stay. You know, he doesn't want to make the trip. He's lazy. So what's he going to do? He's just not going to shower that day or that week. And he's going to say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm too smelly. What do you mean? No, get in the shower. So according to the Rambam, if we didn't know the Rambam, we say, okay, fine, it's a general tour of these guys, their occupation. But if the Rambam is telling me, as long as he cleans up, he can go, then shouldn't he have to clean up? And if he should have to clean up, then what's the tour? Or then if he has to clean up, then that erases this whole line. Because then he's actually never putter. So that's a little bit hard to understand. Whether, I don't know if it's what the Rambam means, what the Gemara means, what's the scenario where this guy is putter? So on the one hand, you can say, if you say not like the Rambam, that it means even when he's clean, because he has this job, people know this is his job, and because he's dealing with it, this is just a p'tur. That's like almost like he's a woman, like this is an inherent p'tur. If he has this job, this is him. So it's not about whether he's actually smelly or not, because again, you could probably have jobs like this, maybe they're less smelly, so it's subjective, and I'm sure there's scales of how much they smell. So if you say like that, then I can understand the p'tur. But if you say it's all about the smell, then when he cleans up, he's chayev, so why don't we make him clean up? Well, this really gets into a bigger question, which comes up, actually somebody asked me this week, comes up, and especially we should talk about something with winter vacation going away, it comes up all the time when it comes to going to Minyan. So people ask, okay, I'm in a remote location, or should I go to that location? It's not going to be a minyan there. So the Gemara in Brachos talks about how far one has to travel for a minyan. So some people, when they ask the question, this person who asked me, a friend of mine, he's very smart. So he already knew the Gemara. So he told me, I'm in a place, so the Gemara, let's say, says a meal or a parsa, right? You're within, let's say, within a 15-minute walk or 20-minute drive, whatever. He was farther than that. So he said, I'm punter, right?
But he should have gone.
The question is, but who told you to put yourself in a makom p'tur? It's very similar to this case, right? Like, you could say, I'm smelly, but who told you to remain smelly? Right? So, by the minyan case, yes, it's true. Once you go to that remote location where there's no minyan for an hour, you are punter. But were you allowed to even go there and put yourself in their punter situation? Right, it reminds me a little bit tangentially of the case that I once asked about, and I didn't realize that what I was asking was actually a big machlokas in the Achronim. We talk about in the yeshivas, which is that I'll give the most practical example for us. Right, so it's a Sunday, it's football season, so you have a big dilemma. What's the dilemma? So the Jets are, or the Giants, I don't want to take a side here. One of them is playing at 1 o'clock, so there's a 1:45 mincha. Problem is, second quarter, the Jets are driving, the Giants are driving. I can't leave the game. All right, I'll go to the 4:05, 4:10 mincha, and then what? No, you don't have taping. You don't have taping. 12:45. Okay, fine. That's a newer thing. Back in the day, they didn't have that. So, and then at 4:10, what happens? You get called for an emergency, right? Let's see, your doctor get called, or your kid. There was something that came up that you could not get away from. So, question is, so at Maariv, do you do two?
No,
yeah,
it's the next day.
So, so it comes the next day, that's not a thing. You could dive it, if you miss Mincha for a legitimate reason, you could dive in 2 Maariv. That's that we say. The question is, there's a halacha like this. If I miss a minion bemezid, there is no Tashlum, correct?
Today's daf. Today's daf also.
You have to daf. Then
a few days before.
Okay.
So why is that?
That's one way to say it. I could argue, okay, but did you have a legitimate reason for pushing off the 1:45 mincha?
Yes, you did.
Let's see, always daf.
It's like kind of.
Nowadays, it's not legitimate.
That's true.
Maybe in the night.
To me, it's like.
There's no chiyuv to daven mincha as soon as mincha gadol starts. You could daven until shkia. So it's not as if some people always daven 10 minutes before shkia mincha every day. So it's not as if he pushed off the mincha.
Yeah, but you were going to go.
Then you have a habit already. Well, you were thinking of going.
Right. So the Gemara talks about this case of Oni Spiel Machron. You have a case, and Ksuvos talks about, where a guy says to his wife, if I don't come back in 30 days, this get should take effect. So for 29 days, he's sitting at the Holiday Inn, he's meeting clients, and then he knows this is only a day trip away back to his wife. He plans on getting there 29 and a half days, right before the buzzer, he's going to come. And then on the last day, the last ferry out, he misses it. No more ferries, he misses it. So the Gemara says, well, there's two halachas. If he's prevented from coming because of an onis, then we don't say the get is chal, because something beyond his control happened. He meant, if I don't come back in 30 days, on my own volition. So is that an onis? He missed the last ferry, but he also delayed 29 days. But he also had the right to. It's very similar to the Jets case, right? In the sense that...
I would say it's an onis.
So the Gemara debates that. Yeah. So it's very similar to that. If you put yourself in a position to then get an onis, right here, I put myself in a position where now there's no minion within an hour, so am I considered putter or not? So all these cases are debated. There's machlokesim in both. You ask your LOR regarding each of these cases. But in regards to this case over here, the Gemara seems to paskin that they're putter, but the Rambam tells us as long as he cleans himself up, he's chayev, and the question on that would be, so then shouldn't he have to clean himself up? I didn't see an answer to that.
Maybe in those days, it's not, you know, like today we just go into the showers very easy. In those days, it may not be that easy. You have to get to the bathhouse. Like, you know, they didn't have bathing accessible to them.
So you're saying you couldn't mandate him to do it. The Rambam is telling you that if he does it, he would have to go. But you're just saying that, but we that wouldn't be, or therefore, a requirement for him to do that. Since it's not a simple process.
It may just not need to get to a bathhouse. Like,
actually,
it
wasn't going
to
get rid of the pot anyway.
They used to go on dates and smell like that. Like a dead body.
No, but he's leaving, like, let's say, a week early to get there. If he's staying home,
he's going up to, you have to leave whatever it takes to get up there.
Right.
You gotta get ready to go
off.
Could be a 2-week trip.
I hear. Okay. So that's an interesting sugya to note in regards to these smelly occupations. So continuing in the Gemara, second wide line on Dalet Amud Aleph, Nashim va'avadim sheinim mishuchrarim. We said in the Mishnah, two other individuals who are patur from Re'iyah are women and unfreed slaves. Says the Gemara, Bishlama Nashim kida'amran. I understand why women are patur, because they're women. And we saw over there, no, not because Mishnah Gemara. Because why? Because of Zachar, exactly, because they're not males. However, Elavadim, you know, how do you know slaves are pater from Iyah? So Amar Vuna, because Amar Kra, when you come see Hashem, you're coming to see El Pnei Ha'adam Hashem, God, your master. So it says the Gemara, Mi She'ein Lo Ela Adon Echad. God has to be your only master. So Yatza, that excludes Zeh, She'esh Lo Adon Acher. He has a different master. So don't come to me. Only if I'm going to be your only master should you have a chiyuv to come to me. So says the Gemara, that's the source of excluding avadim. Halama likra. Why would I need that? Michti. Kol mitzvah sha'isha chayeves ba, eved chayev ba. Kol mitzvah sha'ina isha chayeves ba, ina eved chayev ba. If you ever want to know if an eved is chayev or pater in a mitzvah, you have to ask one question. Is a woman chayev or pater in it? Why? De gamar la mi'isha. Rashi points out there are two psukim, each one by a woman, one by a slave. Each of them say the word ba. We make a hekish, whatever a woman's chayev in, an evet's chayev in, whatever a woman's putter in, a slave's putter in. And therefore, since we already know by Re'iyah that women are putter, I don't need a pasuk to tell me slaves are putter. I know it, because women are putter. So says the Gemara, Amar Ravina, lo nitzucha ela, lemi shechatzi eved, v'chatzi ben chorin. We're not talking about a regular eved. We're talking about the most interesting man in the world. He's half-half. And Deikanami, I'll prove it to you that we're talking about this individual. Deikanami, nashim v'avadim, she'ena mishuchar. We didn't just say avadim, we said unfreed slaves. It's a weird lashon. My she'ena mishuchar, it says the Gemara. What does that mean? What's that lashon? Ilema she'ena mishuchar and chal, that they're not freed at all, then listening avadim stoma. Then what was the necessity of the extra lashon? Just say, they're avadim. If they're not free, that's what avadim are. Ela must be lav, it must be she'inim ishurkaron legamre. They're not fully freed. Mind you, what would be a case like that? Mishachatz eved v'chatzi ben chorim shma mina. Now again, I have to reiterate that that's only according to the Mishnah Rishona that our Mishnah was talking about, but Beis Hillel was chozer to agree with Beis Shammai that doesn't exist. because it wouldn't make sense for him to get married. And therefore, our Mishnah was before the change. Mm. According to Mishnah Achruna, such a person doesn't exist. So we can talk about whether he's chayav or not, but at the end of the day, such a person doesn't exist. But that's at least what the Gemara is talking about. Now, the Mishnah also discussed...
but we have a pasuk telling you about this person that doesn't exist, right? Aren't we learning exactly from the extra words in a pasuk?
Yeah, El Pnei Ha'adon Hashem. But right. Again, you also have...
Right, I'm saying, but if the person doesn't exist, right, because we force him to the other slave owner to free him, so why is there a pasuk?
That's only by the Mishnah Rishonah, you're saying.
Yeah, how could the pasuk be by the Mishnah Rishonah, which we reject?
That's a fair point. I'm not sure. So the Mishnah also discussed four other cases. Chiger, a cripple, Suma, a blind person, Chola, a sick person, and Zakin, an old person. Stana Rabbanan, three lines from the bottom, Da'av and Alf. Regalim, Pratlavali Kabin. You gotta have legs. Someone who is amputee, someone who has a peg leg, he doesn't have to go up. Davar Acher, Regalim, it doesn't refer to just legs. It's actually also excluding anyone who needs to use something else besides for their legs to get up there. So Prat Lachiger, a cripple, Chola, he needs someone else to help him get up there. Lasuma, he's got to use a walker. Lazakin, he's got to use a wheelchair. Lashini Yachol Asbaragla, someone who for another reason can't go up on his feet. So now the Gemara just questions that last case. V'she'enu Yachol Asbaragla. He can't go on his feet. So V'she'enu Yachol Asbaragla, Asui Mai. I don't get it. Is he a cripple? Is he old? Like, why can't he go up on his feet? So Amarava Lasuye Mifanki. Someone who's, as we would call it, an istinus. What's he an istinus for? Says Rashi that he won't walk outside without shoes. He needs to be wearing shoes outside at all times. And why is that going to be a problem here? Because we know when you come to visit Migdash, you have to take off your shoes. So the Gemara says, Dichsiv, how do I know this? Because the Pasuk in Yeshayahu says, Kisavo liros panai, when you come to see me, mi bikesh os miyedchem romos chatzerai, who told you to trample on my chatzer? Meaning with your shoes. Meaning take another. In other words, take off your shoes. So such a person is considered eno yacho lalos baraglov. Since he won't take off his shoes, he's pater from Re'iyah. Because one of the requirements of Re'iyah is got to take off your shoes and go to Har HaBayis. Now Tosus raises a very interesting question. If I asked you on the street, what's the source that a person doesn't wear shoes when he goes into the Beis HaMikdash? What would you tell me? Last week's Parsha. Moshe and the Sneh. What does God say to him? Shal na'alecha me'al raglecha. I always thought that that's the source, that when you enter a holy place, take off your shoes. So Tosos says, I don't get it. The Gemara Rashi over here is telling us that the source of the requirement to not wear shoes in the Beis HaMikdash is from a pasuk in Yeshayahu, where God says, when you come and see me, basically, why are you trampling with your shoes? I thought it was from Shal na'alecha. So Tosos gives a certain answer, but Rabbi Yashiv says like this: what is the yesod? What is the reason why shal na'alecha mi'ar lecha? Why did God instruct Moshe by the Sneh, take off your shoes? This is a holy place, right? So what? Does the holy place have some type of force that the shoes will burn? Why is holy place? What's the connection? So Rabbi Yashiv says we have a halacha of mora mikdash. And there are many manifestations of the halacha. You can't bring your makil there. You can't bring your wallet there. It's a holy place, and you have to fear it. And to fear it, you have to treat it like a holy place. So you can't just do normal things. Don't wear your regular shoes. Take off your shoes. So that's a halacha that is driven by the halacha of Mora Mikdash. If that's the case, says Rabbi Yashiv, now, from Shal Na'alecha, I would say, okay, fine. So anytime I'm in a holy place, take off my shoes. But what if my shoes will actually assist me in performing my mitzvah? Because by Aliyah L'Regel, you have a guy, he's been traveling for a week, surfaces aren't like we have here, nicely paved, and even at Har HaBayis, takes off his shoes, the cobblestone, the pebbles, it's not comfortable for him. He can do it more b'zrizus, chavi more b'simcha, if he can put on his shoes, and that won't be something that will contradict Mora Mikdash. If anything, that will enhance his Mora Mikdash. Because now he'll be able to focus with pure kavana on the task at hand by wearing shoes. Says Rabbi Yashiv, so from Shana Alecha, all I know is if I'm just entering the holy place, take off my shoes. But what if I'm entering with the shoes and the shoes will help me do my mitzvah? Maybe I should be allowed to wear my shoes? Comes along this pasuk and says, even kisa vo'o l'ros panai, you're coming to visit me. You're coming to be ola l'regel. Nevertheless, mi bikejos miyadchem romas chatzerai. Who told you to trample with your shoes? So this pasuk is needed as an additional layer of a pasuk to tell me that even when I'm going to wear my shoes in order to enhance my mitzvah, in order to enhance my mora mikdash, nevertheless, the pasuk in Yeshayahu tells us, I have to take off the shoes because that's what God wants. Tana, ha'arel v'hatame p'turim min ariyah. Someone who is uncircumcised, someone who is tame meis, they are both putter from the mitzvah of Ariyah. So bishlama, tame, I understand someone who's tame, why he's putter, d'chsev, u'basa shama, v'hevesa shama. Because you have to be able to enter the mikdash in order to be able to bring your karban. So therefore, kol sheyishno b'biya, someone who is able to enter halachically the mikdash, yishnu bahava, he should also be entitled or be required to bring a karban. The kol she'enu b'biya, someone who is not halachically allowed to enter the mikdash, enu bahava, he should not be chayav to bring a karban. And therefore, someone who's tamei, who is not allowed to enter the mikdash, he obviously cannot bring his karban re'iyah. How do I know someone who's uncircumcised, how do I know he is exempt from the re'iyah? So the Gemara says, Hamani, it's Rabbi Akiva hi. Rabbi Akiva shita. What does Rabbi Akiva say? He equates someone who's uncircumcised to a tamei person. Titanya Rabbi Akiva omer, ish l'rabos esa arel. It says ish legave when it comes to an arel. It says ish when it comes to a tamei. So the Gemara has a limud. It has an equation that therefore an arel should have the same halachos as a tamei. And since a tamei person is exempt from the karban re'iyah, so too an arel person is exempt from the karban re'iyah. Tanu rabbanan tamei pater min re'iyah. And we just saw this. Dechsev ubasa shama beveisa shama kol sheishnu bebiya ishnu bahava kol sheino bebiya ino bahava. Since a tamei person cannot enter, he also cannot bring the karban. Riochanan medahavai omer mishnah Yehuda suma ba'achas me'ino pater min re'iyah. We saw this last week, that someone who's blind in one eye, we pointed out Bilam was blind in one eye, pointed out Menachem's opinion about blind in one eye, that someone like that is pater. Why? Because the pasuk says, Yira'eh, Yira'eh, and therefore we learn, Kederach Sheba Liros, just like he comes to be seen, Kach Ba Liros, Ma Ba Liros Pestei Enov, just like he is going to be seen with two eyes, Kaviyachol, Av Liros Pestei Enov, so too, in order for him to be Chayek, he has to come be able to see with two eyes, and since he cannot see with two eyes, he will be pater from Re'iyah. Let's go a couple more lines. Rav Huna kimati l'haikra yira yira bachi. When Rav Huna got to this pasuk that he says yira ekol zechorcha, that God wants to see you. It's not only we think we're coming to the shul to talk to God. The fact that God instructs us to come means He wants to see us as well. So he started crying. Why? So Amar evet sherabo mitzapelo l'roso. At a certain point in history, God wanted to see us, and now yisrachik menu. And now he doesn't. Dichsiv, as the pasuk says, Kisavo liros panai mi bikesos miyadchem romos chatzerai. I don't want you trampling on my chatzer anymore. And at a certain point in history, God said, I don't want you coming anymore. Imagine a father who tells his child, don't come home for Yontif, don't come home for Shabbos. It's the biggest shtach. It would feel terrible. And that's why Rav Huna was crying. Rav Huna kimati l'haikra bachi. Now, once we're talking about crying, let's talk about another pasuk that he cried about. Zavach d'shlamim v'yachal d'sham. So at a certain point in history, God told us, go sacrifice your karbanos and you'll eat with me, you'll eat there in the Beis HaMikdash. So Eved Sherabu Mitzapa Lechel Al Shulchano, at one point in history, God wanted us to eat on His table. And now, Yisrachik Menu, now He's so distant from us. Dichsiv, Lamali Rov Zivcheichem. God says to us at a certain point in history, I no longer want your karbanos. That's very sad. Continuing, Yomar Hashem, Rabbi Lezer Kimat Lai Karbachi, right? Several weeks ago, we had in the parsha that at a certain point, Yosef reveals to the brothers, Ani Yosef, and the pasuk exclaims that the brothers were completely shocked. They had no words because they were completely bewildered by the fact that this was Yosef. And realizing that he knew their intentions, he knew their plan, and therefore they were embarrassed. Says the Gemara, Umato chacha shel basar v'damkach, if a person can be so embarrassed by it being known to a human being his averos or something he did wrong, tochacha shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Allah has kama v'kama. When God plays back the video of our lives and shows us what we did wrong, how much more so will we be embarrassed? Rabbi Elazar kimati la'ikra b'achi. Rabbi Elazar got to the following pasuk, he cried. Vayomer Shmuel al Shaul, lama hergzathani lahalososi. So essentially, this was a case where Shaul HaMelech was about to fight the Plishtim. Shmuel had already died. Shaul was nervous. He didn't know if this was a battle he was going to be victorious in. So he was trying to get a sign from God that he would win. He tried to get in touch with God, went straight to voicemail. So he tries the Urim Tumim, it didn't work. So he goes to, you know, the black market of that, which is the necromancers. So he goes, finds one, they want to conjure up Shmuel's neshama. Finally they do it. And Shmuel says, why'd you wake me up? I was sleeping very peacefully. So, Uma Shmuel Hatzadik, Yamis Yari Minadin, Anilahas Kamakama. So apparently when Shmuel was woken up, he didn't realize why he was being summoned. So he thought he was being summoned for judgment. And that scared him. And so the exclamation is that if Shmuel Hanavi, one of our highest, right? If we say Moshe Aaron Bekohanav, Ushmuel Bekoreshimo, we say Shmuel was on the same level as Moshe and Aaron. If he was scared about judgment, how much more so will we be scared about judgment? Now, what was he scared about? Ushmuel Maihi, Dechsev, Atomar Ha'isha El Shaul, Elokim Ra'isi, Olim Olim. So the necromancer said, I see two individuals arising from the dead. They're neshamas. So Olim is Trey Mashma, Chad Shmuel, So even though Shaul summoned Shmuel, Shmuel wanted to bring backup. Because remember, Shmuel thought he was being summoned for din, and therefore he wanted to have someone vouching for him. He brought along Moshe Rabbeinu. Amar Le, Shmuel said, Dilma chas v'shalom ledina mispa'ina, maybe God's summoning me to din. So kum bahade, so Moshe, you come and have my back. Because there's nothing that you were in the Torah that wasn't fulfilled. So if you vouch for me and you, Moshe Rabbeinu, say, I'm Shmuel, I'm a good guy, then maybe they won't be so hard on me in Shemayim. And therefore, because we see that Shmuel was scared of din, how much more so should we be scared of din? And that's why Rabbi Elazar was crying when he got to that puzzle. Stop here.